You are listening to the podcast of the Matyas Corvinus Collegium, the largest talent management institute in Hungary. If you want to know more about our mission, please look up our English website at mcc.hu/en or check out our Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter channels for interesting articles and analysis of our professors, external contributors, and students. Look up our knowledge base at corvinak.hu/en.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. This is the second part of our discussion with Dr. Callum Nicholson, and I would like to continue with a somewhat provocative question. Can you mention a climate change scholar whose theories or ideas were famous for some time, but were proven totally wrong later?
I can't actually, but I think for a particular reason that I think the problem with the whole discussion around climate change is not that some of the science is wrong or that there have been scholars who've been proven wrong and so on. The problem, again, is not the science so much as the social science, because the issue is that within science, the standard for a scientific claim is not that you can verify that it is true, it's that you could falsify it if it is false. So what that means is in science, understood in the sort of post-positivist Popperian sense, which is, I think, more standard philosophy of science in the last 40 years, I mean, depending on your point of view, but I think it's probably the most dominant view, that the standard of a scientific claim is whether you could set up an experiment by which you could prove the claim false or the proposal or hypothesis false if it was false. And so in this sense, actually, science doesn't really assert truths. What it does, it falsifies untruths. So we get less wrong rather than more right. And I think most scientists, when you speak to them, understand this distinction, and they approach their work with a certain humility. The problem is that in the social sciences, when you start looking at a lot of social scientific claims about the impact of climate change on, for instance, human migration, it's not that the claims they make have been falsified. It's simply that they are often unfalsifiable. Because if you have a claim like climate migration, so talking about people who move from climate change, who is a climate migrant? How do you define it? How do you distinguish a climate migrant from an economic migrant?
Actually, for the record, this was the main topic of our last discussion, our previous discussion here at Diplomacy Podcast. So I recommend it for the listeners. Sorry for this break.
No, it's good. And there is a link, and but I think it's an important example, because the problem with the social science is not that it's false, it's that you couldn't prove it false if it is. It's not even true or false. It's just arbitrary and meaningless. There's an American poet called Tom Gunn, and he had this great line. He said, "Under the dust thrown up by a baffled sense and the dull thunder of approximate words." And I often think of this phrase when I look at the social science on climate change's impact, because there is the dust thrown up from a baffled sense and the dull thunder of approximate words. Climate migration is a very approximate word, and it has a sort of dull thunder in our head. It throws up a lot of dust. It makes it very difficult to actually work out what precisely we're talking about. And if we can't pin down what we're talking about, then what are we talking about? And how can we take what we're talking about as a framing or an evidence base in order to take action which has intended consequences? And if the action doesn't have intended consequences because we don't know what it's about, then again, we come back to the problem of the road to hell is paved with good intentions. So I think that's the issue generally, is not that there are certain scholars whose ideas have been proven false. It's simply that a lot of the social science, which is half of the discussion really, is, I think, intrinsically equivocal and vague.
My experience is that the first thing that comes to people's mind when they hear this topic is disinformation, regardless of standpoint. So it is inevitable to discuss this aspect as well. Can we state that the false information and climate change in the international media go hand by hand?
Well, I'm not sure we can, in a sense. I mean, look, there's always mistakes that happen, and there's always errors that are made. But there is a tendency these days for people to look at the mainstream media and say they just give false facts. You know, Donald Trump famously said it's all fake news. I always felt that Trump's critique was, as so often with Trump, there was there was something, there was what he said, I think, was wrong, but there was kind of a deeper truth sometimes in what he said, which perhaps he didn't even understand or really care about. And I think the deeper truth is this, that if you have any sort of media outlet, I don't think they're reporting false facts. I mean, if a media outlet discovers that a fact they reported is actually false, they often, or indeed always, do a correction. The issue isn't that they report false facts. The issue is something much more intrinsic to the human condition and certainly the media, which is that we also editorialize. So the article may, the facts may be accurate, but the framing of the facts, the significance we give them, the angle by which we look at them, the decision to report on some facts and not others, the decision to put some on the front page and some on the back page, that's an editorial choice. Now, they have to make editorial choices. There's no such thing as simply the news of reporting what happened today.
Because but the selected news.
Well, because inevitably, I mean, reductio ad absurdum, if we just reported what happened today, we'd have to report the dog got walked in the park. You know, we make an editorial choice that no one reports on the dog walking in the park unless some celebrity is walking them or the dog bit someone, you know, but even then it's a choice. And so there's an editorialization that happens. And so the issue around media coverage of a lot of issues, not least climate change, is not necessarily false information, but the editorial choices that are being made. And that's where one of the things I think where there's kind of a deeper truth sometimes in what Trump said that made it feel sometimes like he had a point, even if you disagreed with the way he framed it.
Can you mention an example?
Of specifically with Trump?
Yes.
Well, I mean, as I said, like you'd say the media is all fake news. And I think there is a, or you say it's alternative facts, whatever it is, you know, these sorts of phrases. And again, I don't think it was that they were fake news, but of course there is an editorial bias in different papers, both left and right, depending on the paper. And I think that's true. There is a bias against certain things and so on. He's a politician, so half the papers will be for him, half against him. I mean, I just as quickly sort of a riff around that, something I've often felt as a distinctive difference between, say, Barack Obama and Donald Trump is I don't think Barack Obama was a liar. Like, I think Barack Obama tried to report the facts as he saw them. He did his homework. He's a smart guy. I think he had intellectual integrity. Regardless of whether you agree with his politics or not, you know, I don't think he was a cynical character. The problem is Obama was superficially, in a sense, truthful. But I think sometimes there were deeper lies in his worldview or deeper untruths because he would say things like the arc of history bends towards justice. This is great political rhetoric.
Yes.
I don't really think it does. That sort of teleology of thinking that the world is going in a particular direction is a hope, but it's not a fact. And but whereas with Trump is a superficially, I think, a liar. You know, he just lied as he spoke. Everything he said was false, basically. Almost every day he would say things that were clearly false. And even people who like Trump would like, no, that's another one of his untruths.
That's right.
But the sometimes with Trump, kind of like the Joker in the court or the child saying the emperor's got no clothes, he would say things that had deeper truths in them. And now, the way he said it may not have been to everyone's taste. The examples he gave may not have been good examples. The way he phrased it may not have been accurate precisely to what he said. But I think sometimes with Trump, at an emotional gut level, I think a lot of people listened to him and thought, yeah, I think he's basically right.
Basically.
That's yeah. The key word. And this is where I don't think Trump's critics really give him enough credit or see the appeal of him. Because the appeal of him is that they focus on the letter of what he says, which was all nonsense. But they missed the spirit of what he was saying, which I think is truer. Whereas Obama, the letter of what he said was much more legalistically correct. He was a lawyer, of course, by training. But the deeper spirit of it, I felt, was perhaps not cynical, but maybe naive.
I see. It's an interesting question. Can you mention the most famous hoax, climate change hoax? Or is there a one?
Well, again, I mean, I don't mean to be, you know, difficult. But I'm not sure there are hoaxes as such. I mean, there's always people who make stuff up, but I mean, there have been in science and in the social sciences, there were some famous hoaxes in the 1990s, and indeed about 10 years ago, there was some more where real scientists wrote papers in social science journals, very postmodern, post-structural social science journals, and they wrote hoax papers to expose.
Actually, there is an example. Sorry for interrupting you. It's scholar called Peter Boghossian.
Yeah, he's one of the examples.
For a Canadian scholar.
He's American.
Yeah. American scholar, sorry. He was here at MCC, and he wrote several papers on these issues.
I know Peter a bit, actually, and Peter's very interesting, and he and a guy called James Lindsay did this a few years ago, about 5-6 years ago. They wrote a bunch of these sort of intentionally hoax papers. And the point of them writing them and submitting them to sort of postmodern social science journals was to write nonsensical papers that made no sense and actually had an ethical framework that, if you really looked at it, was unethical. And they submitted it to see how many passed peer review and indeed got published. And not all of them did, but some of them did. And then what they'd do after it was published, they would then announce that they'd done this and they'd expose the corruption of academia, right? Now, I don't actually necessarily agree with Peter's methods on that, because I think it's a slightly cynical thing to have done. I think it's more complicated than it's a bit of a gotcha thing. There is, in science, there has to be a certain assumption of good faith. The peer review process is, people don't get paid to peer review things. I have to peer review things all the time. I should be doing one this morning, I think. And it's difficult to find the time. That they're quite intensive to review, to do it well, and to show the respect for the author, to really pay attention closely to what they've done. But you're not paid for it. And so you have to kind of assume certain things, that there is good faith involved and so on. And so I think it was a slightly bad faith approach. I personally wouldn't have done it. But so we have those types of hoaxes which are intended to expose something. But you're talking about, I think, hoaxes where someone is, you know, making up something about climate change in order to convince people, not to expose a corrupt system. I'm not aware of any as such, but I do think that the bigger problem that the discussion around climate change faces is not hoaxes, but a more innocent lack of perspective, a failure to consider, as I've said, the whole picture of things, of which climate makes up one part. But again, the human experience involves many compromises and trade-offs. And if we're only looking at the climate factor and not looking at, say, the economic factor or the livelihoods factor or the energy factor, then I don't think we're being honest with ourselves about the challenges we face as people and indeed the requirements we have as people.
Well, speaking of hoaxes, there is one recently elected politician who considers climate change and global warming and quote, a socialist hoax. And he's obviously Javier Milei, the president of Argentina. And his statements are going viral on social media. And you touched this topic, but what is your opinion on these politicians who see this topic similarly to Milei, like Donald Trump? And I'm sure that there are other politicians as well.
Well, his brand is to be provocative. And I think in a sense, he is less probably a cure for what ails Argentina, but more a symptom of how bad the problem is. That in a similar sense to Trump, actually, because, you know, I think in the United States, Trump was often, if you look at people who like Trump, they see him as a cure to a disease. And if you don't like Trump, you see him as a disease in need of a cure. But I always saw Trump as a symptom of a disease in need of a cure. Clearly, there's something wrong with the body politic. Something is ailing the body politic. It has an illness. And the usual solutions are not helping. And indeed, they may be making things worse. So people said, well, there's this guy who's not an establishment figure. Let him tear it all up, tear it all down, start again. And the guy in Argentina, I think, is a similar sort of character. So I think we need to recognize that when they say these things, I think it's to provoke. And maybe there's an emotional catharsis for the culture to hear these things. But I'm not sure if it's the solution as such. I mean, I wonder if characters like that are less planting new growth, or whether they are the sort of fire to burn the old growth to create the ash, which is fertile in which new things can grow, and which is a necessary part of social change, you know. I mean, it's worth noting, actually, there's kind of a broader anthropological point in this, which is that anthropologists have studied human societies, complex societies, and how they change. And there's a really interesting thing that happens often whenever a society begins to go through a massive shift, where the technology's changed or the economy's changed, the whole structure's changed. They go through a period of what anthropologists call liminality, a period between one era and the next era. And during this liminal period, what's really interesting is that all the normal authorities lose their nimbus. They lose their authority. The experts are dismissed and the establishment are kicked out and all the rest of it. And what you have is a transition period where these people appear who anthropologists call edge men or liminars, these charismatic or often charismatic individuals who are almost quite artistic in their sensibility, who come into that gap and they provoke people to new ideas and they represent change. And the really interesting thing about these liminal stages is all the norms of the society are inverted. What was true becomes false. What was right becomes wrong. The people who are on top lose their status. The people on the bottom gain their status. The loons on the margins, everyone thought were crazy, now become, you know, the leader. These sorts of things, and if you look at what's happening in the States with the Trump phenomenon in the last few years, and if you look at what's happening in Argentina, what I see is these politicians who've emerged, like Milei and indeed Trump, are classic edge men, very charismatic, very against the establishment, even if they kind of are, offering very provocative ideas. And for me, I don't think they are necessarily the change that we need in the end, but they are absolutely a sign that things are inverting and shifting. And so so I think we need to see them in that light. With regard to your specific question of their statements around, you know, socialist hoax and global warming, I mean, it's just politicking. I don't think it's a hoax so much. It's not necessarily a socialist one. There are socialist elements for sure to thinking that the state should run everything and we should try and achieve net zero at the cost of everything else in our lives. But I think it's more complex than that. But I think we need to see these types of characters as symptoms of the problem we have rather than the disease or indeed the cure.
I see. Well, to sum up our discussion, do you think that politics have an effect on how the international media presents this phenomenon?
Well, I think yes. I mean, politics, of course, has an effect on the media, but I think it's also the other way around, of course. The media has an effect on politics. I mean, there's no one who reads the media as much as the politicians, and they care about their polls and they care about people's opinion of them. So I think the two are closely tied together. And talking about the causality, the direction, I'm not sure is even that helpful, because it's bi-directional, if that's a word. So yes, I think there is a connection between the two. And I think what we're talking about in general is the state of public discourse. It could be from political figures with a podium or a pulpit, rather, and it could be, newspaper editors. And of course, there's a great deal of overlap between these things. I mean, I'm British. Our last Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, was Britain's probably most famous journalist. Then he became our Prime Minister. So the gap has never been that wide between these two spheres.
Well, Callum, thank you very much for being with us today. And for our dear listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. Goodbye.
Thank you. Sivashem.
Thank you for listening to this MCC podcast episode. For further media content, please look up our English website at mcc.hu/en or look for us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you want to read more by our professors, external contributors, and students, check out our knowledge base at corvinek.hu/en.